This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com coming to you on this 5th day of August 2010, and today I'm honored to be joined on the line once again for my monthly conversation with the international forecaster himself, Mr. Bob Chapman of IntForecaster.com. Mr. Chapman, thank you as always for taking the time to talk with us today.
Well, you're welcome, and I'm extremely happy to be here.
Excellent. Well, I'm extremely happy to have you here. And tonight I wanted to start by talking about a line from your most recent forecaster, where you're writing about, quote, "Now the word is that government wants to put a 1% sales tax on every transaction Americans make. That could be a 2% tax, like in stocks, 1% in and 1% out. This tax would happen on every transaction. It's no wonder people are lining up to leave the country. The idea is to tax everything. The bottom paid for in Congress will try to pass it after the election in the lame duck period. You would even be taxed depositing money to a bank account. We'll keep you apprised of future developments," end quote. Well, that is some startling and horrifying information. And I want to pick up on one of the points that you make there, basically that people are lining up to leave the country. And this is something that I've been thinking about and pontificating on recently, as I start to think that really, although America has for centuries really now been a beacon to the world and a place where people have flocked in masses to try to make their fortune, I just really don't see it in that light anymore. And I think very few people do. I mean, obviously there are people in third world countries and in Mexico and the like that want to try to sneak into America for all of the benefits that that can get them. But ultimately, I don't see the American dream really anymore. I see it more as a sort of nightmare prison police state that's clamping down at every level. And I think that's an impression that's beginning to spread throughout the world. And I don't know if you've had this, but I certainly have had quite a number of people write in asking me about living overseas and the possibility of moving out of the country. So would you like to address that tendency of people to want to move out in this stage and give some advice and pointers in that?
Well, certainly. And first of all, in the 1% transaction tax, as it's called, this is something that's being bantered around behind the scenes in Washington. It's not anything that's a firm proposal. It's not something that has been put into the form of law to be considered by a subcommittee. But they're trying to raise money. They're desperate. And this is one of the considerations, along with the nationalization of retirement plans, where government would give a guaranteed annuity to people. This is a government that's bankrupt. And so I don't think that's a very good idea. Or to start taxing retirement plans. And so there's a number of other things on the platter, but those are two of the things that are being talked about behind the scenes. We have been receiving for probably the last 10 years requests about leaving the country, but they're getting far more serious now. I'm getting a lot of professional people who are saying, gee, I don't want to do this anymore, particularly people in the medical field with this new Medical Reform Act. Many doctors who and dentists who are in their 50s are saying, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. I get enough money. I can live on it. I'm going to stop. That's about 25%. And there are others who want to leave the country and continue to practice someplace else. And so we're getting a lot of it. Now, the basic ground rules are this. Not everybody is fit to live outside the country because they've never done that before. In fact, most people have never been outside the United States. So with that in mind, you have to have a personality that would fit living in another country. Do you know anything about other countries? Is there a place that you think you might like to live? Do you think you might like to live in South America, where they have several governments that are communists? Well, generally speaking, I don't think so. So that kicks them out. Do you want to go to a country that's got a lot of crime? I don't think so. So that kind of kicks that country out, or perhaps a couple of countries in South and Central America. And we're using it as a framework because it's relatively close to the United States. And so it boils down to a few. And then you have those who might like to go to Europe. And what you have to understand about every country that you go to that in order to work, you have to have a work permit. And they're not very good about giving work permits. And in some countries, it's almost impossible to work. Now, the alternative to that would be starting a business if you have some sort of a profession, whether it's as a home builder or a mechanic or a doctor or whatever it is. And so you have to have something. I'm talking about people who are still gainfully employable. And then you have another group of people who are over 55 or 60 and they're retired. They have a set income. Those people are the easiest people to leave. And they can just inquire at the local council or embassy, how does all this work? I think I'd like to go to your country. Now, the best thing to do is pick the country and the section of the country you'd like to live in, Google it and find everything you can about it. And then you go and visit. And then you come back and you talk to the council about what are the rules. Can I own a gun there? Can I bring my coins in? Can I work if I choose to? All of these things. Like, let's say that you wanted to go to Guatemala. A lot of crime in Guatemala. And they're dying to get doctors and dentists. And so you have a dentist who wants to leave Chicago, and he wouldn't mind living in Guatemala. He's not going to make nearly as much money, but he's going to have something to do in the country. He'd love to have them because they don't have enough of them. On the other hand, they probably got a lot of auto mechanics, and they're probably pretty good at it, so that probably wouldn't be a viable vocation in that country. So every country's different. The rules are different. Generally speaking, after 5 years, most countries will allow you to become citizens. In Switzerland, it's 13 years, but that's unusual if you, in fact, wanted to become a citizen of another country. Jim, do you have something to add to that?
Well, I guess my experience is really specifically with Japan, and I also spent a year studying in Ireland when I was a student. But in terms of my experience coming over here to Japan, I came over as quite a young man, and I think that was helpful because obviously when you're younger, you tend to be more flexible and adaptive. And it certainly can be extremely difficult at times when you're living in a foreign country. And I think, yes, there are certainly certain personalities that just don't adjust very easily. And I've seen it time and time again here in Japan, people who only last weeks or months, you know, before they turn around and head home. So you definitely have to have a genuine desire to want to leave the country and a serious interest in thinking about where you want to go and why you want to go there. I kind of stumbled into Japan just simply because it was quite easy to get over here and I wanted to be in Asia. But at this point, it's as the global economy is falling, so too is the local English language instruction industry. So it's getting more and more difficult to establish yourself out here, even when it used to be so incredibly easy, really. All you needed was a university degree, pretty much, to get over. So it's becoming more difficult here, and I imagine in many other countries as economies begin to collapse, you know, in so many places. So it's not a decision to take lightly. And I know that you yourself have lived in several countries around the world. Do you want to tell us about some of the places that you've lived?
Well, Europe is expensive by American standards, if you can believe that. And it's very difficult to get a work permit. So you better be retired if you want to live in Geneva or Zurich or Frankfurt or Paris or wherever. I mean, you can expect to go in the morning and pay $20 for a cup of coffee in Paris. In Zurich on the street, you can buy a bratwurst. It costs you $12. And so Europe's an expensive place to be. And most people speak English today, so it's not really a problem, but it's good if you can learn the native language, and some are easier than others. Central and South America are really much easier. Spanish is not a difficult language to learn, the exception being Brazil, which is Portuguese or a derivative thereof, and they generally agree people from foreign countries with open arms, particularly retirees, because they know that they have at least $1,500 a month coming in that they can live on and they contribute to the economy. And very often retirees volunteer to do all kinds of work within countries, particularly in Latin America, you know, whether it's from coaching the local soccer team or to teaching English to people who are too poor to afford to learn it. And there are people like that in Latin America on that level. That's why we have this tremendous influx of people from Latin America illegally into the United States that are living. I mean, most people throughout Latin America who are uneducated, 3 to 5, 6, 8 years education, which most of the illegal immigrants going to the United States do have. That's it. And so they're making between $300 and $600 a month. Now, that's hardly enough to buy a television set and have a refrigerator. I mean, these are luxuries to people, like they used to be in America during the 30s and 40s when I grew up there. But anyway, there's a lot of opportunities in Latin America, and especially for people who have a vocation of one form or another. There's wonderful schools in some of the countries. Some are better than others. Chile has a wonderful school system, as does Mexico. And the medical and dental care in Mexico is so good that Americans might find themselves taxed competitively in starting a business there. But there's a lot of opportunity. You just have to decide where you want to go and whether you can adapt. And if you have a family, you know, the thing I hear the most is, well, gee, I'd love to go and live in Guadalajara in Mexico. It's exciting. It's a beautiful city. The weather's fantastic. But my whole family's here, and they don't want to go. And how am I going to see my grandchildren and so on and so forth? And so, you know, it's not an easy choice to make. And you got to be connecting with your partner on all cylinders.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd like to reiterate that it's definitely not an easy choice to make and one that cannot be taken lightly, and for so many different reasons and so many things to think about that you might not think about when you're first considering the idea. But one story that I cover with James Evan Pilato on the latest episode of The New World next week on my YouTube account this week is a story from the Financial Times: Americans renounce citizenship to avoid IRS. Basically, it's talking about Americans lining up at the embassy in London to renounce their U.S. citizenship to try to get free of the clutches of the IRS. So that's, you know, another headache that I'm sure a lot of people might not immediately think about when they're thinking about moving away, but it's something that they'll have to deal with eventually. So there's so many different things to think about. But one aspect of this that I'd like to stress is that I get the sense that a lot of people contact me about this because they see the way America is going and they want to get out before the hammer falls, so to speak. But I don't know, I kind of question, I really can't question anyone's motives in that sense, but I do question whether that's a viable solution, because I really don't think there's going to be a country that you can run to get away from the clutches of the New World Order broadly defined. And I think if we don't stand and fight it where we are, I think it's just going to take over the world eventually. So certainly that was not a thought in my mind when I came out to Japan, and it wasn't something I was thinking about or trying to do at that time. So it wasn't in any way motivating me. And I wonder about that motivation as a motivation for trying to get away from what's going to happen in America.
Well, my motivation was different. More than once, going back to 1967, I've been warned enough time by the government. So my circumstances were far different than any other people. But if you're going to renounce citizenship, you've got to be very careful. A law was passed in 1996 that says that after you renounce, the United States government can charge you tax on your income no matter where you are for another 10 years if they choose to. The second thing is you can't go and renounce your citizenship unless you have another passport, unless you have citizenship in another country. So if you're in London, which Jim talked about, are you a British subject, or are you carrying an EU passport? I mean, have you taken those precautions? It's a very, very good question. And what is your immigration status? Does it still have to be renewed every year because you don't have another passport other than U.S.? Or are you an immigrant that's been there long enough that you can do anything you want in the country without committing a crime, of course? And there are states of being within countries like being an immigrant that doesn't have to report anymore. So these are things that are important. I would think the best thing to do would do with those people in London would to get a British passport and or another kind of passport. So that's a very strong consideration, because you can't go anywhere, and you certainly can't go to the United States because you would not have a U.S. passport anymore. So you got to do some thinking about it. And I wouldn't be propelled out of America because of taxation. I think, you know, there are more important reasons. America has become a tinderbox. And the minute they stop shoveling money made out of thin air into the economy, the coals are going to go cold, and the economy is going to go into a deflationary depression. Absolutely. And it'll carry the entire world with it.
Well, that's right, and that's another topic that you cover in yesterday's International Forecaster newsletter, is the fact that the quantitative easing is apparently going to continue. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, it's a guess. I back into these things because I don't have any connections within the Illuminati. Although I will say, Nathan Rothschild in London last week subscribed to the International Forecaster, which floored me. And their credit card
incredible.
Was approved. Pardon me?
That is incredible.
I know it. It's a change, but they obviously want to have heard about me and want to know what I'm talking about. Because, quite frankly, they're the enemy, and they're probably listening to this program. And so, but that's okay. All's fair in love and war, so to speak. And what we want to do is very simple. We want the truth for the people, and we want to have the people have freedom. And the people with great amounts of money and control and power, they don't want that, most of them. And so, with that said, I think that in backing into, it was only 3 or 4 weeks ago that I did this, I discovered in my research that I thought that the Federal Reserve, which lent money to banks, about $1 trillion, and they didn't charge them any interest, the banks were keeping that money on the balance sheets for solvency purposes, and they lent it back to the Fed at 2.5% interest, which you got to pay as taxpayers. That money's been sitting there for about 15 months. I think what the Fed's going to do is stop paying the interest on the money that was borrowed, that was lent to them, if you can follow that. And I think they're going to tell them that you got to lend that. Now, as we all know, banks or fractional banking. And during the Halcyon days past, they were lending 70 times their asset base. 70, 7-0. It's normal to lend 9 times. Right now, they're 40 times. So if they have $1 trillion and the Fed says, look, you got to lend this money out, we got to get the whole thing going, if they just use 5 times, they'll lend out $5 trillion. And that's what I think that they're going to do over the next 2 years. And it'll be $2.5 trillion a year, which it cost the same amount for the last stimulus program, which just ended. $868 billion the legislature allowed the administration for stimulus. The rest was supplied by the Fed. And goodness knows how much we don't know about, because the Fed says that everything that they do is a state secret, even though they're a private corporation. And, of course, the new financial regulations law makes them a dictatorial power that controls the entire United States now through finances of one form or another. And so that's what I think they're going to do. And that means the economy should go sideways to slightly higher over the next 2 years if they do that. Now, if you noticed 3 weeks ago, about the same time I came to this conclusion, the stock market went from 96.80 on the Dow Jones Industrial Average up to around 10,660 or something like that. And that, I think, was based upon the realization in the Fed that that's what they were going to do, and they told all their good friends at Goldman Sachs and Citigroup and J.P. Morgan Chase, their owners. These are the owners of the Fed. So actually, the decision wasn't made at the Fed. It was made on Wall Street. This is what we're going to do next. And they ran the market up, inside information, stealing from everybody. They do it all the time. But anyway, that convinced me. And so this is what I think they're going to do. And they're going to try to increase taxation. But I don't think it's going to work. And I think there's a good chance that the tax cuts which are instituted under the last administration will remain that way rather than go up 15%. But it's only a guess. Okay, second of all, they are kicking these other things around behind the scenes. I don't think they'll get passed because I think that there's going to be a very large amount of incumbents expelled from office. Now, some of the people we're going to get to replace them will probably be equally as bad, but the point is we're going to shake things up, and I think we'll have enough people in there who are not going to go along with the program of the powers that be from behind the scenes and continue to do what they've been doing in the past, and that is doing everything that they're told to do because they're paid to do that, which they're not supposed to be, but they are. That's what campaign contributions and all the other goodies are all about. And so these people have to be expelled from office. Hopefully we can get rid of a half of them or more. And if we can do that, we get a chance at regaining our freedom. And if we do that and regain our freedom, that's wonderful. If we don't, you don't even want to contemplate the alternative that these people got planned for you, and that is world government and enslavement. And it could, in the process, turn into a revolution.
It certainly could. We are on a knife edge right now, so much really does depend on this quantitative easing and the sideways slash upwards movement of the economy over the next 2 years. So if things play out the way that you are saying that they might, then that would put us in past the 2012 election before we start seeing the consequences of this really starting to play out in the economy.
Well, they're going to go for it here, and if I'm right, and it'll be in, you know, the flip side of all of this is 14% plus in inflation. And they're never going to admit to that, but that will be the immediate outcome, because monetization means, instead of sterilization, when the money is sitting in a bank or in the Federal Reserve, it's sterilized. It's not being used. When it gets used, it's monetized. It goes into the system. And it's immediate within 6 months, inflationary. Now, we already have 7 to 8% inflation. The government doesn't tell you that because they lie about everything. But that inflation is there, and it's going to get worse. And then if they do this caper, so to speak, then we're going to have 14, 15, maybe more percent inflation. And so that's the flip side of this. And this is a sacrifice that they have to make. And this is why they continue and have continued to depress gold and silver prices because gold, starting 15 months ago, became the number one currency of the world because it doesn't owe anybody anything. The dollar is now number two. And that's why gold's been going up, and that's why silver's been attempting to go up. And you're going to see changes that have to come about in the monopolization of the manipulation of gold and silver prices, among other things. And a lot will depend upon the election, too. Will laws be passed saying that the executive order signed in August of 1988 by Ronald Reagan, the president's working group in financial markets, can we neutralize that? Can we get rid of it so that Wall Street and banking doesn't rig every market in the world 24/7? I think we can do that. We can have free markets again. I mean, just think of it. And so gold and silver are going to go right through the roof, believe me.
Absolutely. Well, the things that are possible if we can take control back of Congress in 2010 would be an incredible thing. So tell us a little bit about how you see this playing out, and what do you think people should be supporting in this upcoming election?
Well, supporting anybody who's not an incumbent. I don't care how good they've been. Get rid of them. They're all on the take. Now, they like to let you know that, well, you know, we have to have money to do this and that. I mean, somebody runs in the primary, in the senatorial race in California, and spends $99 million. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. Why would anybody spend $99 million, and the same thing happened in New Jersey with Corzine, when the job pays $200,000 or $300,000 a year, or whatever it pays? I mean, it's got, you know, they got to have looting in mind, because how are they ever going to get the investment back? Either that or they're an egomaniac. And so if somebody's going to spend a lot of money in an election, they'll want to get it back because it's usually their own money. And elections are bought today. People are hammered with propaganda. They're hammered all the time by the government and the major media with propaganda, which is called brainwashing. And they get away with it because most people don't know what's being done to them. Probably two-thirds of the population don't even have a clue. And out of that group, probably one-third might discover. The rest of the people know that there is great attempts to brainwash them. But the process has to be interrupted, interdeep. We must be able to stop this network of criminal enterprise that is Washington and New York City in America. We have to stop them. They are arrogant. They don't care what you think. There is no law as far as they're concerned. Law is what that is. I mean, we just saw Citigroup steal $50 billion and get fined I think it was $50 million or $500 million. It's ridiculous. Goldman Sachs stole $5 billion. They get to pay a fine of $550 million. They get to keep $4.5 billion. Berkshire Hathaway, run by Warren Buffett, who's another criminal, accounting fraud, stole $300 million that should have gone to the government. They paid a fine of $100 million, and nobody ever goes to jail. So what we have running our country, corporately, governmentally, and also from the financial sector, is a crime syndicate, far bigger, far more powerful, far more brutal, and far more evil than the mafia. And I grew up among the mafia, so I know.
Very interesting. Would you care to share more?
One side of my family was all professors, and the other side were not. And so I had a very interesting childhood.
Very interesting. Well, as I think it's becoming more and more apparent that we are experiencing this upsurge in a vast populist movement to throw the bums out, and we are seeing so many incumbents getting voted out in primaries, that there's no doubt that if this trend continues, we're going to see an incredible upset in the midterm elections later this year. But maybe it's just my cynical side speaking here, but once we see the inevitable electronic voting machine rigging and jiggery pokery that's going to go on behind the scenes to ensure that the incumbents stay where they are, what is the proper response?
Well, I hate to tell you this, but it as the economy deteriorates at one point or another, there'll be revolution in the country. And it won't be isolated in the United States. It'll happen all over the world. There's going to be world revolution if it is seen by others and Americans that there is no possible way out of this morass because it's so controlled by people who are wicked and in evil that there's no other alternative than to take your government back. And if you can't go do it legally, people may very well do it outside the law.
I think you're right, and that's a scary alternative, because obviously things like that can be steered and manipulated away from the place where we want to go to into a chaotic situation very easily, and I think that plays into the hands of those in power so easily, so that's why we have to concentrate on doing what we can, I think, before it comes to that. So playing this out forwards, I mean, if we are looking at the inevitable economic collapse, and if we are looking at some type of world revolution as a result, what do you see playing out from there, and what kind of time frame do you think we'd be looking at?
It's very difficult. Timing is something I've learned over 50 years. That is extremely difficult. Especially in the marketplace, because of the manipulation by the U.S. government, or more nearly the powers behind government. You can't use short-term cycles and graphs and charts and waves and things like that. You can use them on a long-term basis, but short-term you can't do it anymore. And the same thing is true with predicting events. I mean, I know what I think is going to happen, and I know what I hope is going to happen, and we'll know better in November where we're going, because if we lose out, we know there's going to be no other alternative. If we are successful, then we may be able to save the system. That's still dicey, because the people who are fighting here have all the money in the world, so to speak, and they have the power to affect things. And, you know, who knows what their relationship with their own military is going to be. I mean, it used to be a time when whenever the president said this, we're going to do this, everybody did it. And that's where you take your orders from. I'm a veteran, I know. And nowadays, that isn't that way anymore. I think troops in the American military have learned that they've been fighting very unjust wars, and it's been going on for quite some time here, and they're tired of doing that. They think that, or had thought that, they were fighting for the freedom and protection of the American people. They no longer believe that. And how do I know that? For 5 years, I've done a program every Thursday called the Marine Disquisition, active and retired military people, not only from the Marines, but the Navy, the Air Force, the Army, State Department, in one. They call in all the time on the program. And so there are people that agree with us who work for government. But the military are not going to execute an order that is an unlawful order. And the powers behind government think that they will make them do that, and they're not going to do it. And they have told me personally, officers, non-coms, enlisted men, they just won't do it. I mean, if somebody's in Fort Bragg and they're told to go to Charleston, and round everybody up. Anybody that argues, just shoot them. They're not going to do it. They're just not going to do it. And so this is something that the powers behind government hadn't figured on. And they got a big problem, because the military's not going to go along with them. And but that's good for us, because if there's trouble, we say, hey, military, we're going to join you. Now, if we can't be on the front line, that's okay. We'll do the cooking and do the counterintelligence and all the other things that you need in the background that we're capable of doing, but we can't run 80 miles today with a 40-pound pack with six grenades and so on and so forth. So I think that is an ace in the hole that they thought they had, they no longer have there.
Well, let's certainly hope not, and I think that's why we have to continue to redouble our efforts to reach out to the military and police and make them realize that they're on our side. And I think, as you say, more and more of them certainly are. All right, well, switching gears slightly, I don't know if you picked up on this, but there was a story recently about the IMF, which is thinking of implementing a new global currency called the Bancor. And yes, here's another proposal from the IMF for a type of global currency. And there was a strategy document that they published earlier this year that's been picked up on by the Financial Times and talked about a little bit. Did you see this story? And if you did, what did you make of it?
Well, I saw the story. I don't know the structures yet. But if you read the IMF regulations, which you don't have to do because I already did it, there can be no country in the IMF that has a gold-backed currency. So that means any Bancor or SDR, it'll be just another fiat currency, and it's not going to work. It simply is not going to work. Now, there's people floating around America who have written books that if we have U.S. notes and the good faith and credit of the United States government, and we do away with the Federal Reserve, everything's going to be hunky-dory. It doesn't work that way. We had continentals between 1790 and 1800. You've heard the expression, it's not worth a continental. It didn't work. They didn't have any gold backing, no silver backing, no real backing. There was no promise to pay other than somebody saying, well, we'll make it good. It'll always be there for you. Well, it won't always be there for you. A currency has to have backing. If Bancor had 25% gold and silver backing, it might be a very viable instrument. But they're not going to do that, because when they do that, they lose control, because they're limited to 9-to-1 lending in the fractional banking system. If the rules are played by, they can't do 70 and 40-to-1 anymore. And that's where they get their power. They rig everything. And so they take and they leverage themselves. Let's say the last real estate boom bubble that we just saw, the banks were all in on it. That's why they went up to 70-to-1 in their lending. Now, they had inside information. They knew that interest rates were going to go down close to zero, if need be. And they knew they could pay preposterous amounts of money, particularly personally. And so they went ahead and did it. And that's fractional banking. That's a currency with nothing behind it but the good word of the Fed Reserve. And the Federal Reserve is a private corporation that doesn't have any more money than anybody else, because they have made themselves insolvent because they have committed and done what they've done over the past several years. And so I don't think any currency can work without backing. And the BRIC countries are certainly not going to accept it. And that would be China, Russia, Brazil, India, Venezuela. Maybe I've left somebody out, but that group, so to speak, they're not going to accept a currency that's not backed by precious metals. And that's why gold is trading and has for the last 15 months, decoupled from the dollar as the only real currency in the world now. And everybody's going to find that out. You're getting it early here. And that's why, if you're an investor, you have to be in the biggest bull market of all time in gold and silver. And I've been making these recommendations in the International Forecaster for the last 11 years, and everybody has made money. And everybody's kept their assets together. Because the function of gold in particular is as a safe haven to protect you if you have something to be protected.
Well, Bob, I'd like to get your take on something that we covered recently on the Corbett Report, and that's the idea of the colonial scrip that was used before the continental currency and was used apparently quite successfully in Pennsylvania at any rate. What's your take on colonial scrip?
Well, I think it's very doable, but you're going to have to have some strict controls. It can be done on a sovereign state basis like it was then. And I think it'll work fine, and it'll be a way of dismantling the Federal Reserve. But if you're going to, let's say you're in Massachusetts and you're accepting notes, dollars we'll call them, for lack of a better term, if you're accepting them, you have to know the financial condition of, say, if they're coming from Oklahoma, whether the payoff is going to be there on the currency. I mean, we've seen things like this happen in the past, and people have discovered to their chagrin that this type of local currency didn't work very well because the states were sloppy, or the small country was sloppy and didn't do what they were supposed to do financially within the state that issued the currency in the first place. But I think it's very doable, and it would disarm the Fed. The reason to be would be gone. But would the federal government allow it? I mean, there'd be a big fight over it, and we might even have another civil war. I mean, who knows?
Who knows indeed, but certainly it's important to be looking at historical examples of ways that people have tried to evade the clutches of the banksters before and see what works and what doesn't. But very fascinating conversation as always, but why don't we tell people a little bit about the Forecaster and how they can, just like Nathan Rothschild, become a subscriber?
Well, surprise, surprise, I must say, and I want to thank everybody who listens to this program, because many of you have become subscribers, and our subscription base has gone absolutely bonkers. It slowed down in the last month, but it's incredible growth. And in this environment, it is phenomenal, and I want to thank everybody. The Forecast is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. We publish by email on Wednesdays and Saturdays. Usually runs around 40 pages each time. We have a hard copy that goes out twice a month for those who are not on the internet. And you can get a free introductory copy by going to theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, Forecaster.com. Or we have a second site, that is www.intforecaster.com. Or we answer all questions as well, and we get lots of them, believe me. You can use our email, which is similar to the second site address, which is Bob, B-O-B, at intforecaster.com. Or you can call toll-free 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178. And they're making a special offer there for a free one-year subscription to the International Forecaster. And I think you should really take advantage of it, because it's well worth it.
Absolutely. I could definitely chime in on that. It's something that I look forward to twice a week, and it's always there. So my hat's off to you for all the work that you continue to do. And obviously, people should also go check out intforecaster.com for more information about Bob Chapman and the work that you're doing on so many different radio stations and so many appearances every week and continuing to write the newsletter. Just an incredible amount of work. So excellent. Keep it up. And we are making a difference. So once again, Bob Chapman, on behalf of all of my listeners, thank you for appearing on the Corbett Report once again.
Again, my pleasure. And I want to thank you all for listening.
And if Nathan Rothschild is listening, let me just give a special shout out to him and say your New World Order will not stand.
There you go. But I'm glad the other side is listening, and maybe they'll change their mind and give us a break.
Let's hope. All right. Bob Chapman, until next month. Thank you.
Bye-bye.